From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 24th day of June 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. And then K-State's Mike Wolverton will join us to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, the former ag economist at USDA, Keith Collins, has criticized the ethanol policy. We'll hear more about that later. And we'll get an update today on crop progress and weather conditions across the Midwest from the five top corn-producing states in the nation. In order, they are Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Indiana. Hey, and in just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL, public radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures like this in the wheat pit nearby July contract today, an $8.70 settlement price, 3¾ cents higher. September futures up 3¾ cents as well, $8.88 the final price. December contract, $9.12 for the soft red, up 4 for the afternoon. July corn futures, 11¾ cents lower, $7.125 the settlement price for the July. September corn futures at $7.27 were down 11¾ cents, and December futures were off 11¾ cents as well, $7.475 the settlement price there for the December corn. March contract, $7.64 down 10½ cents. July soybean futures, $15.01, 14 cents lower. August at $15.04 down 13. September down 13 at $14.92. And November soybeans at $14.91. Settlement price, 11½ cents lower today. July bean meal futures at $4.01.30 down 2.70. July bean oil, $63.10, 17 cents lower. June live cattle, $97.70, $1.05 lower. August futures at $104.67.5 down 2.5 cents. Feeder cattle, August contract from the CME Group, $113.47.5 up 42.5 cents. And September futures for the day, $75.90 down $1.45. That July futures was down $1.35 for the day, by the way. The lean hog futures at $74.90 were down $1.35 on the afternoon. August futures at $75.90 were down $1.45. Here's what the outside markets look like for the day. Nearby crude oil futures trading the August contract at $136.85, 11 cents higher. September futures at $137.40, 26 cents higher for the day. July ethanol futures $2.83 1/10. That's down 3 1/10 for the day. And the natural gas trading the July at $13.02 1/10 is down 18 2 cents for the day. The heating oil futures at $3.81 6/10. That's just about 2 cents higher for the nearby July. And the propane trading the July at $1.87 1/2. Gold futures June contract $4.40 higher at $889.20. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 11,840. It's just about 2 points lower for the day. The U.S. dollar, 73.23. That's down 0.19 on the afternoon. The CRB index at 454.45 is down 0.93. Here's what the forecast looks like for the two-state region from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. He says tonight it'll be partly to mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms in Illinois and in the western parts of Indiana. Lows will range from 58 in the northeastern part of Indiana tonight to 68 in the southwestern parts of Illinois. Tomorrow, a mix of clouds, sunshine, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Highs will range from 82 in northeastern Indiana to 90 in the southwestern parts of Illinois. Scattered showers and thunderstorms should occur right on through Saturday of this week. In general, Ed says rainfall frequencies and amounts will be greatest in the northern third of the two states, with a greater variation in rainfall amounts further south. Dry weather expected Sunday and Monday, and dry weather may continue right into Tuesday in many areas of the two-state region. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about your view of the marketplace in Chicago today.
Well, I think that we saw, you know, the little bit of reaction out of the box this morning for a little higher, but it just didn't hold. We were hoping for some little better news. The crude was a little higher overnight. The gold was stronger. The outside markets there, the talk or the rumor of the Iranian nuclear plant being possibly hit with a strike, and that sort of worried things and pumped things up in the overnight. After we got going, we saw a little fund liquidation. It is the end of the coming up Monday, be the end of the quarter, the end of the month, first notice day for July contracts, and also the big crop report that generally would be a really big crop report, being we would have planted acres, and this one it's going to be an estimate, I think, Todd. So all that stuff together with a little fund liquidation and not much buying coming in, and a little kinder crop ratings yesterday all added into a little bit of a sell-off today.
You know, it appears that there's an awful lot of will that's gathering in Washington, D.C. to do one of two things or possibly both. One of them is to have U.S. EPA actually follow through on the waiver request from Texas. What's the possibility that will happen? And the other, of course, is a call out of Iowa and other places for the CRP to be opened up and to be opened up very quickly.
Well, I don't know how we can't get many more corn and bean acres for this year right now. I mean, we've already released for grazing later in the summer. I think that we will probably see some sort of CRP release, acreage release, if we continue to see crop stress here that way. So, you know, I think that's somewhat inevitable. We've talked about it on the show many times. I think that that's probably a good move by the government. The one thing that we are looking at is, of course, that a lot of ethanol plants closing down or shutting down for a while here or stopping production or stopping going into production, Todd. And that, of course, decreases our ethanol usage of corn, too, for the meantime.
Yeah, there was a news report, and you'll have to forgive me. I know it was two plants that Verison is not going to open in Nebraska and maybe Minnesota. Welcome, Nebraska, I think was the name of the town.
You're the right states. I'm not sure about the towns.
But anyway, a couple of them. And then I think the one in Linden, Indiana did not open. Is that right, too?
No, Linden, Indiana is up and running.
Oh, it is up and running. Oh, that was missed. I thought maybe that it had been up and running, but I read that. Maybe I just read that wrong.
Cloverdale, I think, is one that closed down over here
for
a while.
Anything else that we ought to cover before I let you go for the day?
Well, I think that, you know, we saw the corn being a little weak and the wheat staying strong because unwinding the corn-wheat spread, Todd, the corn just not seeming to take off like someone thought it had. And also a little bit of unwinding of the July NOV spread as far as the beans go. So that's why the wheat stayed strong in essence for everything else going down.
Okay, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us on the Closing Market Report. Happens on a Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Yesterday, USDA released its latest crop progress report. The condition of the corn crop in Monday's report improved in spite of the wet weather that won't seem to let go in the Midwest. 59% of the corn crop is rated good to excellent nationwide. However, that trails last year's 73%. Soybeans planted are now at 91% nationwide, so they're still trying to finish that one up. 96% is the five-year average as of June the 22nd. Several states are farther behind, such as Missouri, which has only two-thirds of its bean crop in the ground compared to the five-year average of 98%. Emergence nationwide has reached 82%, well behind the average 92%. Soybean conditions remain pretty steady at 57% good to excellent, but still lag behind last year's 66%. Winter wheat, 95% headed nationally compared to the five-year average of 97%. Northern wheat has seen significant delays. For example, Montana's crop is only 46% headed compared to the average 77% at this time.
This is Brad Parks, Deputy Director from USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending June 22, 2008. Dry weather and sunshine in Iowa gave farmers the opportunity to begin some replanting and to assess damages occurring from the previous week's excessive rain and flooding. Sun and drier conditions allowed for continued spraying and growth of corn and soybean crop areas unaffected by excessive moisture. Corn yellowing from nitrogen deficiency and excessive moisture is common in waterlogged areas. Crusting has slowed soybean emergence in areas that are drying out. Hay first cutting advanced rapidly. There were 5.1 days suitable for field work compared to 5.3 days last year at this time. Corn condition rated 4% very poor, 11% poor, 35% fair, 41% good, and 9% excellent. Flooded corn acreage is 8%. Corn replanted or to be replanted is 11%. Soybeans are 95% planted, which is 5 percentage points behind last year and the five-year average. Soybeans are 85% emerged, which is 14 percentage points behind last year and the five-year average. Soybean condition rated 4% very poor, 10% poor, 36% fair, 41% good, and 9% excellent. Flooded soybean acreage is 7%. Soybeans replanted or to be replanted is 12%. First cutting of hay was 63% complete. Pasture and range condition rated 2% very poor, 6% poor, 26% fair, 50% good, and 16% excellent. Again, this has been Brad Parks, Deputy Director from USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office. Thank you.
This is Brad Schwab reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending June 22nd. Warm sunny days accompanied with relatively dry conditions allowed for nearly 6 days suitable for field work. Excellent progress was made in soybean planting, and the wheat crop was ripening throughout the state. However, some areas weren't as lucky as levees broke around Meyer, Illinois. Standing water is still prevalent in a few fields, and there is still fear of flooding along the Mississippi River in some low-lying areas. Statewide, topsoil moisture was rated 6% short, 76% adequate, and 18% surplus. And here's an amazing statistic. In just 2 weeks, the southwestern crop reporting district went from being the wettest area of the state to now being the driest, with a topsoil moisture rating of 48% short. Growing degree days since May 1 at 805 are staging a comeback and now only trail the historic average by 63 days. Corn growth made good progress last week and was measured at an average height of 22 inches, however still trails last year's 49 inches and the five-year average of 40 inches. Despite the tough growing conditions this spring, the corn crop is still rated in fair to mostly good condition. Soybean planting advanced by a respectable 18 percentage points to 91% complete. This compares to 98% 1 year ago and for the five-year averages. 75% of the crop was reported emerged, 20 points behind the 95% five-year average. The soybean crop was rated in fair to mostly good condition. 85% of the soft red winter wheat crop was reported turning yellow, compared with 98% last year and 96% for the five-year average. 32% of the crop was reported ripe, and 3% had been harvested by week's end, well behind the 46% five-year harvest average. This has been Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Becky Summer of the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service, Nebraska Field Office, with the crop weather report for the week ending June 22, 2008. Despite below normal temperatures, many crops responded favorably to the warmer conditions and showed improvement in color and growth. The corn crop is showing a lot of variability, with later planted fields just emerging to some fields over 4 feet tall. Corn conditions rated 70% good or excellent. Soybean planting is nearly complete and on average a week and a half behind on emerging. Winter wheat was mostly headed and is 8 days behind in turning color, with harvest expected to begin around July 1. Oat conditions rated 90% good or excellent. More than half of the crop has headed, which is 10 days behind the average. 68% of the alfalfa acreage rated good or excellent, but the first cutting progress remains about a week and a half behind. Pasture and range conditions are mostly good or excellent. This is Becky Summer of the USDA NAS Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Dan Loftus, Deputy Director of the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop weather report for the week ending June 22, 2008. Drier weather across much of Minnesota allowed producers to harvest 33% of the state's first cutting of alfalfa. The drier conditions also permitted producers to complete much of their spraying activities and other necessary field work. Statewide, on average, there were 5.7 days suitable for field work during the week. This is up 3.6 days from the previous week. The average temperature for the past week was 64.4 degrees, 1.9 degrees below normal. Statewide topsoil moisture supplies as of Friday, June 20th, were 0% very short, 3 short, 84 adequate, and 13 surplus. As of Sunday, June 22nd, the average corn height was estimated at 11 inches compared to 34 inches last year and 21 inches for the 5-year average. Soybeans were 96% emerged compared to 100% last year and 98% average. The average height of soybeans was 4 inches compared to 9 inches last year and 6 inches for the 5-year average. Spring wheat was 6% headed compared to 37% last year and 30% average. Oats were 16% headed compared to 59 last year and 41 average. Barley was 7% headed compared to 47 last year and 31 average. The first cutting of alfalfa reached 61% complete compared to 87% last year and 79% average. As of Friday, 62% of corn and soybeans were rated in good or excellent condition. 76% of spring wheat, 79% of oats, 74% of barley were rated in good or excellent condition. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the crop weather report for the week ending June 22nd. Cleanup from flood damage and debris continued as floodwaters receded. Areas of the state that have dried out enough to support machinery continued planting or replanting soybeans. For the past week, 7% of the corn and soybean acres were reported as flooded, down 2% from last week. The winter wheat harvest is underway in southwest Indiana, and some farmers that have made their first cutting of hay have reported good yields. Topsoil moisture was rated at 0% very short, 4% short, 73% adequate, and 23% surplus. Subsoil moisture was rated at 0% very short, 2% short, 68% adequate, and 30% surplus. Precipitation ranged from 0.07 to 1.4 inches. Temperatures averaged from a high of 89 to a low of 47 degrees. For the week, 4.9 days were rated as suitable for field work. 97% of the corn acreage has emerged, compared with 100% last year and 98% for the 5-year average. 59% of the corn acreage was rated as good to excellent condition, compared with 49% last year at this time. Many farmers who have replanted reported being concerned with the lateness of the season. 90% of this intended soybean acreage has been planted, compared to 99% for last year and 96% for the 5-year average. By area of the state, 97% has been planted in the north, 91% in central region, and 76% in southern Indiana. 79% of the planted soybean acreage has emerged, compared with 97% for last year and 93% for the 5-year average. Winter wheat condition for the week was rated as 73% good to excellent, compared to 32% last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, the land-grant university in Illinois. We're joined this afternoon on a Tuesday by K-State, another land-grant university's grain analyst, Mike Wolverton. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hi, Todd. How are you this afternoon?
I'm very good. Earlier in the day, there was a little news story out that Keith Collins, who was the former chief economist at USDA, had written, I guess, a white paper of sorts. He did that for Kraft Foods Global about biofuels, ethanol in particular, and the impact it was having or could have on food prices. I sent that to you. You had a chance to go through it today?
I did, Todd, and it was a really good report. Keith is well-respected, and he's done a very good job of pulling together all the information available on biofuels.
You know, interestingly, the news report on this one said that Dr. Collins was critical of the ethanol policies of the United States. I'm not certain that that's what the paper really shows. Did you get that from the conclusions?
Well, no, I didn't. I think this is a fair-handed look at renewable fuels, ethanol included. And at the end, he does make an argument for reconsidering the biofuels policy. But I don't see that this is against the biofuels. I think the popular press has sort of misconstrued what he's saying here.
Yeah. Let me read his statement at the end, and then you can tell me what you think his view of this ethanol and food versus fuel debate might be. So his statement at the end on what the U.S. might consider is that policy actions that could affect food prices. He says the federal government should give serious consideration to whether biofuels programs should be permitted to intervene significantly in corn and soybean markets, or whether consumers acting through market forces should be the primary mechanism for allocating crops between food and fuel use, with biofuels programs functioning as a safety net for biofuels producers. So I guess what he said is maybe what we should do is to allow the industry to work on its own, take away some of the subsidies, and then put a safety net under it, much like the rest of the farm economy has.
Well, perhaps I think that may be what he's saying, and we probably do need to reconsider some of that. But the market forces are really, really reallocating this as we speak because of what's going on with the ethanol producers. But when he talks about safety net, this is serving as a safety net for farmers because the farm program is no longer a very good safety net for farmers. So this is kind of replacing the farm program. If we would go back to revisit the farm program to make that a better safety net for farmers, then maybe we could go down the path that Keith Collins is suggesting.
So you're suggesting that where he says as a safety net for biofuel producers, the biofuel producer would go back all the way back to the field then?
That's the way I interpret what he said, yes.
I interpreted it back to the plant. But those are two sorts of different things. What else did you find in this particular document?
Well, you know, what's interesting, what I picked up in popular press is that they're quoting Dr. Collins as saying that 35 to 40% of the food cost increase are due to ethanol. But that's not what he said. That is the percentage of the increase in food cost. What he really said was that about 1.8% of increased food cost is due to ethanol.
Yeah, I read that.
Which is closer to what the administration is saying. They're saying 3%. So I think that was where they're misinterpreting what he said.
I read that line as well. Hey, can you stay with us and come back to me in about 6-7 minutes, and we'll finish this up for anybody who wants to listen on the podcast?
Sure, Todd.
Okay. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the weather. And then after that, if you go to willag.org, you can hear the rest of the conversation that I have with Mike Wolverton of K-State in Manhattan, Kansas. You're listening to a special extended edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. This is for the podcast only. We'll continue our conversation from earlier in the program when we were talking with Mike Wolverton. He's a grains analyst at K-State University out in Manhattan, Kansas, and has gone through some of the white paper that Keith Collins, Ph.D. and former chief economist for the United States Department of Agriculture, had penned for Kraft Foods Global. And we were discussing, Keith, at the time that I had to let you go, just a bit about what your perceptions of Dr. Collins' writings were and how he did a good job of pulling together everything that surrounded the biofuels, in particular the ethanol industry.
He did. I think this is probably the best work we've seen in this area. This will be the base paper that everyone will be quoting from here on out, I think.
What did you see that you found most intriguing?
There are a couple things that one thing, Keith wrote this paper, he just finished it, but he was writing before the recent things that happened in the market, the flooding and everything else. And I think some of the assumptions he makes we probably could question. Number one, he's thinking that we're going to have all these ethanol plants come online and use about 4 billion bushels of corn, as USDA is forecasting. And my contacts in industry are saying that that's just not going to happen.
Now, how many do you think we'll lose?
Well, we're losing quite a few. I don't think anyone has a number, but there were several bankruptcies announced this week, and apparently more on the way. The inefficient plants and plants with financial problems are falling by the wayside quickly. Plants under construction are not coming online. They're just, they're thinking, why bring this big plant up online just to lose money? And predictions are that we're going to lose most of the small and medium-sized plants before this is all over. They'll just simply shut down.
This is not unprecedented, of course, and it happened in the early 1980s.
It did, although this time I think we have a lot more investment here in very good plants, and they won't go wasted. The industry, I think, will consolidate. Some big players will buy up the plants that they can run efficiently, and we'll end up with a smaller, more efficient ethanol industry. And I think the key word there is smaller. I went back and reread the one passage about the safety net.
Uh-huh.
And you were right. He did say safety net for biofuel producers, but there's no safety net here. I think he's referring to the mandated usage. And even though the mandate this year will be for 9 billion gallons, I don't think we're going to produce 9 billion gallons in the U.S.
Yeah, I guess we'll need to talk to Dr. Collins to see what who that safety net was for, whether it's for the producer or for the corn, the ethanol producer or the corn producer, and how he might envision it being put together. If it's different than, obviously it must be different than what the tax incentives that are already in place and the tariffs that are there.
My concern is in this election year, Congress will bow to political pressure and back away from the import tariff and the blending tax credit. I would hope they wouldn't touch the mandate, though. I think if they change that mandate, that would give the wrong message to people who are developing renewable energy sources. I think we need to go ahead with that. But I would not be surprised at all to see the import tariff and the blender's tax credit changed.
Yeah. So if we lose these ethanol plants and we have a smaller set of ethanol production, maybe we back off on the mandate, maybe we put CRP in place. Historically, this would make some sense as to the way that the price of corn has fluctuated in the past. And Dr. Collins makes some reference to that, although he says that this time around he didn't think that the price of corn was going to come down, but he was basing that, as you said, on 4 billion on the extended usage and upwards of 4 billion bushels, I guess. And so he showed us in 74 that the price of corn, season's average price of corn went to 302, which was a record, and then dropped by 30% 2 years later, did something similar in 1980, went to 311 and dropped 20% 2 years later. In 83, went to 321 on a season's average. Now, these are the cash prices, and dropped 30% 2 years later. And then back in 95, went to 324. And it took 3 years, but it dropped by 40% at that time. Could you see something like that happening 2 years out, so that once we got to the 2010 season, that we'd drop off from our season's average price, which is now, what, $5.41, is that right?
I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen, Todd. I think two things can happen here. Number one, we're going to get a production response around the world to these high prices. It'll just be more coarse grains grown in parts of the world where they can be grown. Secondly, the prices we're seeing right now are starting to choke off demand.
Right.
We're going to see, I think, less corn used for ethanol production, certainly less for livestock production, and even exports may trend downward because of the high prices. So I would not be surprised at all to see corn prices taper off.
You know, the prediction, I think, for corn farm price is at $5.80 a bushel over the season average at this point. So that would taper off, but would put us at a new high level. Do you think that producers can operate in the $4.50 functionally with the price of fuel and input cost?
Sure. What you're referring to there is just the increase cost of producing a bushel of corn,
right?
And it's jumped a magnitude greater than it was before. I think we're probably around $4 a bushel on break even on corn, and so I would not expect to see the price of corn go below that level. But it could approach that. Say the $4.50 to $5 range.
And what else did you glean from the white paper as you read it very quickly today?
There are a lot of the things that he talked about in this paper that probably won't change going forward. And that is increased demand from around the world, just so because the economies have been good in these countries and people are consuming more food. And livestock production is increasing around the world, too, and that demand is going to stay put. Another thing he mentioned was the policies that countries have that are really making the situation worse, and that is subsidizing low-priced food, which increases consumption, and also limiting exports, which reduces the amount of grain on the world market, and that would tend to cause prices to go up as well. So, I mean, it's not all due to ethanol. This is a very complex issue, and we need to take a look at a lot of different factors.
Can you turn? There are a couple of things I want to go to. Turn to page 19, and he puts in some numbers. I think our listeners will be fairly interested in this. And I'll drop this PDF file that Mike Wolverton and I are looking at, not on the website, but in our weekend newsletter. And you can subscribe to that, so we'll put it in the weekend newsletter, and you can pick it up as a link out of there at willag.org. Just hit subscribe. But we're going to turn to page 19 at this point and go through some of the implications for corn carryover stocks. And basically what he's done is he's put the stocks to use ratios, and he's put all the numbers in a table form for 06, 08, 09, 09, 10, and 10, 11 out there. And he's got some interesting numbers. He uses USDA's numbers to begin with for the 08, 09 crop, $673 million for the carryout for the corn. And he drops it in 09 to 497 and 484 in the 2010-2011 crop year. Stocks to use ratios, 5.4 for this year, 3.8 for the following year, and 3.6 for the year after that. Those are just astonishing numbers.
They are, and I don't think we're going to get to those levels, but that is not enough to maintain pipeline supplies on corn. And so at that point, then we start seeing higher prices start racing the demand. But in that table, we see that he continues expanding ethanol usage,
right?
Corn use for ethanol production. I would question that assumption. I'm not sure we're going to see that at that level.
But where will you be at then? What do you think this year's usage might be?
What I'm hearing from the industry is closer to 3 billion bushels than to 4.
Than to 4. And then would it steady off at 3, 3.5 at that point?
Well, it depends on what happens to the price of oil, gasoline, and ethanol. I mean, if those prices remain high, then we'll probably start seeing production increase again. If we see a drop in oil price, then we could see even less corn use for ethanol production. It's really uncertain right now just what direction that's going. But I just don't think it's going to be as high as he's projecting in this table.
Yeah, one of the other interesting notes that I made as I went through the report that he talked a bit about the livestock industry, and at the time of his writing, and I think this was released the 19th day of June, which isn't too terribly long ago, but was probably written a lot of it a bit before that, that the livestock industry numbers haven't yet really shown or reflected the increased food or increased grain cost on the other end. So maybe we have quite a bit of food dollar increases or inflation yet to come in the coming months.
Well, I think you're exactly right. What has happened in the livestock sector is that poultry and dairy seem to have made the adjustment to higher feed prices,
mm-hmm.
but beef and pork have not, and they're making an adjustment now. And what's happening is we're seeing meat prices remain fairly stable in the meat case, but that's because we're downsizing the herd and slaughtering a lot of animals. That will end soon, and we'll end up with lower livestock numbers, lower corn, lower feed use, corn, and much higher meat prices in the meat case. So I think that's going to be the next wave of inflation to hit the consumer.
Yeah. Will there be much relief on the demand side when that finally comes to be? I know we saw the numbers from last week on the cattle on feed, and then we've got another report, Hogs and Pigs report, due out this Friday.
Well, I think consumers are either going to have to pay higher prices for meat in the meat case, or I think they'll probably cut back on protein
consumption. Yeah, well, I understand the consumers are going to see the higher prices eventually, but the question was, will there be enough cutback that in demand for corn because of the livestock industry numbers dropping?
Well, that's another thing we could question Keith about in this table is he may be high on feed consumption of corn. We may see that demand number drop off as well.
Yeah, I did make note that he said in there that the last 3 years, we have expanded numbers for livestock across the United States at a particularly surprisingly fast rate. And so even if we cut back, it might be to a 2004 level.
That's possible.
Okay. Anything else that we ought to discuss out of this one?
I think that pretty much does it. The export number is something that is kind of interesting as well. We've been sending a lot of corn overseas to livestock producers. And I think as we see expansion of coarse grain production around the world, we may see our exports drop a little bit as well.
All right. Any take-home messages you think Keith Collins was trying to send to Kraft or any place else out of here?
Well, I think one message, he really didn't explicitly say this, and that is that this is a very complex issue. We need to look at all angles of it, and there's no clear-cut solution.
All right. Thanks much, Mike.
You're welcome, Tom.
Mike Wolverton is a grains analyst at K-State for K-State Extension. He joins us on the Closing Market Reports Tuesday afternoon. It's the fourth Tuesday of the month to take a look at the energy and ethanol markets. And today, a little extended visit with Mr. Wolverton as we extend it right into the podcast. Thanks much, Mike, for joining us. And we'll talk with you in another month.
Okay, Todd.
Okay, bye-bye.
WILL depends on support from listeners like you. For 38% of the money it takes to keep programs like the one you're enjoying now on the air. If you haven't renewed your membership this year, please do so by June 30th, the end of our fiscal year, and help us raise the remaining $338,000 to end the year on track and bring you more great programs in the coming year. Mail a check to 300 North Goodwin, Urbana, 61801, or call
1-8. Okay, Mike, you can hear me, but I can't hear you. So what we're because I'm actually probably going out on the radio potentially at other stations, but hopefully not at this point. So what we'll do is I have a weather segment coming up that will show up in about 55 seconds. That runs 4 minutes, and then we'll come back and we'll finish up our conversation. I'd like to do a little more with this white paper. I didn't leave us enough time this afternoon to talk about it, and I think we need to do it more in depth. The good news is we have about four times as many listeners on our website to this program, actually twice as many listeners on the website to this program as we do on the air, so we should get pretty good coverage with it. Okay, so in just about 25 seconds, you'll hear the weather segment, and then I'll be back with you in 4 minutes.
Six six 877-979-9455.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
A little rainfall in the forecast across the nation in a few spots?
Oh, definitely. Now, we don't have a lot of concentrated rain over a large area, but we're going to have some clusters of thunderstorm activity that will be arriving across many areas of the upper Midwest, the Great Lakes, over the course of the next 2 to 3 days, and right up into the weekend. The most concentrated area of rainfall appears to be along the Gulf Coast states as we get into the weekend and early next week.
And then if we could talk a little bit about what's been happening along the Illinois and Mississippi River, parts of Iowa. Of course, that flood is now moving downstream. What kinds of things can they expect? And is rainfall going to enhance, make the flooding in the downstream areas worse? Or are they looking like they're going to be dry enough not to worry about it?
Well, we do have to be worried about some thunderstorm activity. The activity is going to be enough that there could be some localized concerns with some areas of rising waters, but it's going to be a pattern of rain where the thunderstorms are going to be a lot more localized and not as widespread as what we saw earlier in June, which led to all this flooding. So it's one of these good news and bad news situations is that the good news is we don't expect big, widespread areas of rain, but pockets of heavier rain could exacerbate the problem in some areas.
And then if you look around the nation, there are some awfully dry spots, aren't there?
There really are, and those will probably get drier. As we get later in the June here and on our way into July, we're going to be looking at the possibility of drier conditions developing in many areas.
And which areas might those be in?
Well, the southern plain states, which have been able to pick up moisture here lately, will likely start to see it drying out a little bit, and some of the northern plains areas as well.
And then if you take a look around the globe, what do you see, for instance, in Ukraine, China, other places?
Well, first of all, let's look at China. They're especially in the southern, eastern, and central growing areas looking at some pretty good chances for moisture. In fact, there's going to be quite a bit of it in some areas. Across the Ukraine, well, they're looking at near average to slightly below average precipitation. Especially as we head into next week, they're going to be getting a little bit warmer and drier as well. It'll be central Europe that has the best chance of moisture.
Anything on the long-term front you want to take up this afternoon?
Well, everything that we see coming our way in the long term is about as we had expected heading into early July, which is going to be consistently warmer temperatures, but we still don't have, at least for the Midwest and areas along and east of the Mississippi, a hot, dry period of weather yet.
Okay, thanks much.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us every Tuesday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report. Be sure to visit our website where you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports on the World Wide Web. The address, willag.org. That's willag.org. You have a very good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
WILL depends on support from listeners like you for 38% of the money it takes to keep programs like the one you're enjoying now on the air. If you haven't renewed your membership this year, please do so by June 30th, the end of our fiscal year, and help us raise the remaining $338,000 to end the year on track and bring you more great programs in the coming year. Mail a check to 300 North Goodwin, Urbana, 61801, or call 1-866-779-9455.